let's say, for example, that you are involved in a relationship of long standing, but recently something seems to have changed, shifted. Maybe the other person seems a little more distant, or they said something that just didn't click with who you thought they were, or who you feel you are, and suddenly you aren't quite sure where you stand at the moment, but also going forward. Or let's say, for example, that you have a particular job, a vocation even, something you put a lot of yourself into, but lately the stress of getting it all done or the stress of performing at the level you've always expected of yourself has you beginning to doubt all the time and effort you've been putting into it, and you wonder, is this work I've been doing appreciated? Does it even really matter? Or let's say, for example, you have a cause about which you have been passionate. You've spent a lot of resources on it, time, maybe money, maybe you've called in favors from people you've known forever, but you've gotten to the point where you've begun to wonder whether the effort is worth it. Are you really making any difference? Can you really change anything? Or are you just chasing a foolish dream? You know what I'm talking about, that moment, that crossroads where you're trying to decide if something that has mattered to you a great deal is still worth the investment you've made. The investment of time, of emotion, of commitment, of effort. Here's another way I would describe my own feelings about such things. For me, at various times along the way, in ministry, in life, especially those times when I felt overburdened or uncertain, there's often been a very specific question that has come to the surface. Should I care more or less? Should I care more or should I care less? Meaning when I reach a crossroads, a place where exhaustion and uncertainty and deep wondering intersect, should I redouble my efforts to understand, to engage, to lean into the hard times and the hard relationships and the hard work? Or should I take a step back, try to get a little less tied up in whatever it is that seems to have me all in knots? Maybe create a little or even a lot of space, and hopefully with that gain some needed perspective. Care more or care less? I don't know about you, but my tendency in those moments of uncertainty about whether I should care more or care less, whether I should lean in more to the difficulties or back up a little and give myself some more space, my tendency is to be drawn to the idea that caring less would be easier, would be more freeing, and most of all, wouldn't hurt so much. That's often my thinking. But even when I suppose that caring less would be the easier path, I find that my reaction in those times is more often to lean in the direction of caring more rather than caring less. And maybe that's true for you as well. And if so, it could be that's because when you've invested your heart in something or someone, when you've cared a lot already, when you've poured your resources into a relationship, it's really hard to back up or to back away. Maybe it's because caring less is not as simple as just turning down the emotional volume. It's not as simple as dispassionately deciding that a bit more space would be a bit more healthy. The truth is that most of us are pretty enmeshed with the people and the things we care about. Most of us may not want to be more involved, but find it pretty hard to care less when everything in us and around us says you could do more. Now, I'm not suggesting that caring less is generally the better answer, any more than I would say that, generally speaking, caring more is the better answer. It's just, you have to look at it. One thing may not be better than the other. Certainly there are times when caring less is the wiser and healthier way to go, perhaps times when there's an unhealthy dynamic in the relationship that needs to be untwisted, or when resources, emotional and otherwise, have reached their limit. While on the other hand, there are times when caring more is exactly what is needed, perhaps a time when a little more effort could calm the chaos or bring the confusion back into focus, or when more commitment on one side of the relationship might be all it takes to encourage more commitment on the other side of the relationship, more commitment or more trust or more forgiveness. So there's no clear one-size-fits-all answer on this matter of caring more or caring less in times of demand or stress. You have to measure it situation by situation. But even as you measure, you should know that the question, care more or care less, will keep coming back. And it will keep coming back because life is complicated and demanding and sometimes confusing, and because we often feel powerless to affect outcomes, to change what happens, to clear up misunderstandings or mistakes, and because we do care. And when we care, when our heart is in it, we are much more vulnerable than when we don't care, when our heart isn't in it. You know, in the scripture for today, Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem. The text for today is from Luke chapter 13, but it isn't until later in Luke chapter 19 that he actually makes his triumphal entry into the city. And then it's not until chapter 23 that he's brought back into the city to appear before Pilate. So from this moment until those final moments from Luke 13 to Luke 23, 10 chapters, there's a lot of ground to cover. But right here in the text for today is where the journey toward Jerusalem begins. And here also is where Jesus' very specific prediction about his treatment as a prophet going to Jerusalem takes shape. In the story for today, the Pharisees warn him, "Herod wants to kill you. Get out of here." Are they using the threat of Herod to send Jesus packing, or do they really care about what happens to him? Likely it's the former, but Jesus seems to take them at their word that they have a link to Herod and that they know what he's up to. So he tells them to take a message back to Herod. "Tell him this," Jesus says, "Listen, I'm casting out demons and performing cures today and tomorrow, and on the third day I finish my work. Yet today, tomorrow, and the next day I must be on my way, because it is impossible for a prophet to be killed outside of Jerusalem." It's almost as if he is daring Herod to leave the safety of the city, to wander any distance from his seat of power, saying, "I'm doing what I'm doing, and unless I come to Jerusalem, I don't see how you are a threat to me." But then, too, it seems that he's saying, "Nevertheless, Herod, I'm coming to you." And yet the trajectory of this story, the direction it's headed, is not even about Herod. Jesus isn't coming to Jerusalem because that's where the political action is, like he's some kind of action hero come to challenge the evil king. And he isn't coming to Jerusalem because that's his destiny as a prophet, to come there in order to somehow validate himself as God's messenger. No, he's coming to Jerusalem because he cares about Jerusalem. He cares about the place of his people, their home, their city, their culture, their faith. He knows who they are. He knows their history, their personality, their fickle faith, their violence, their tendency to judge and betray and even collaborate. He knows their need for a prophet and their pattern of rejecting those sent by God. And even so, he has to go. He can't care less. He has to care more. Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to it, how often have I desired to gather your children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings, and you were not willing. Jesus goes to Jerusalem not because it's his mission, although it is. He goes not because it is his duty, although he is a person of responsibility. He goes not for the publicity, although what happens in Jerusalem will make him famous. He goes not because there is some cosmic mathematical equation of blood and death and payment and salvation, and he is the key factor in that equation, although many will come to believe that it is his blood and only his blood that can atone for their sins. No, he goes because he feels the pull that a prophet feels. And that means he has to lean in, he has to care more. He knows that he has a connection to these people and they have wandered from the path, and he is the one who can and who needs to shine a light on the path they are on, as well as the path God intends them to be on. And because he is that kind of true prophet, when he brings truth and clarity to those he knows and loves, it will sting them even more. And stung by his prophecy, they will do what they always do to true prophets. They will make him pay for their sins. That is, they will punish him rather than own up to their own failures and betrayals and sins. And the thing is, he knows this. You might not know how a stranger will respond to criticism or correction, but you almost always know how your loved ones will respond, how your family will respond, how your tribe will respond, how your culture will respond. He knows them. He knows Jerusalem and how they will respond to his call for love and justice. It seems that Jesus is disappointed in their religion, in their religious legalism, in their easy condemnation and dismissal of those who have been tagged as sinners, in their casual abandonment of justice for the last and the least. But he still loves them. They are still his people. And he is in it with them. Because that's the way real prophets are. They're willing to tell the truth, and they're willing to pay the price for telling the truth. They're willing to tell the truth, and they're willing to lean in. They're willing to tell the truth, and recognizing that truth-telling might put them in danger, nevertheless, they do not seek their own safety. They offer the call of God. They keep loving. They take on the pain of the people, because when love and disappointment hold hands, there will always be pain. Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to it, how often I have desired to gather your children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings, and you were not willing. Jesus laments over Jerusalem because that's what prophets do. They lament. They do not delight in the idea that one day those to whom they bring God's message will get what's coming to them. They do not delight in being right or righteous. They do not delight in anyone's pain or suffering. No, they lament. They lament because they are connected heart to heart, and when push comes to shove, they care more, not less. Writing about this text in the Christian Century magazine column, Living by the Word, Eric Barreto, a Baptist minister and professor, says, quote, "In certain quarters of the church, being prophetic is the highest of callings. That impulse makes sense to me. In a moment of political and theological crisis, prophetic voices are desperately needed. We need prophetic condemnations of racism, prophetic protest of walls meant to assuage fear rather than create opportunity, prophetic calls to environmental justice, prophetic poetry that helps us name justice with beauty and truth." He acknowledges all of that, but then he also takes note that, quote, "prophecy is not a job for the comfortable, but for the afflicted. Not a calling for the certain, but for those burdened by the suffering of their communities." That is to say, prophets are not triumphant, but sympathetic. Not removed from suffering, but partnered in it. No wonder their song is a lament. So, where's the hope? Barreto says this, "Prophets don't predict what is next. They look at the world as it is and through their God-suffused imagination, see it transformed. Prophets don't predict what is next. They look at the world as it is, and through their God-suffused imagination, see it transformed. The sins that have been sown brought us where we are today. The past becomes your own. You have to face it anyway. Sisters and my brothers, won't you sing me to the borderland? Break open this heart. The proof of God is now at hand. Those are the lyrics that come at the end of the song the youth are going to sing after the sermon. The sins that have been sown brought us where we are today. The past becomes your own. You have to face it anyway. Sisters and my brothers, won't you sing me to the borderland? Break open this heart. The proof of God is now at hand. The true prophet suffers with the people. The lament is for what has been and how what has been has fallen so short of what could be. And the hope is that we might yet imagine what is in the imagination of God. That something would break open in us and we might yet imagine what is in the imagination of God. I am sure there is suffering in your life, but do you hurt for other people? Do you feel the urge to speak truth, not to separate yourself from others, but to speak truth because you are in it with them? Do you lament what could be and hasn't yet come to pass? Do you pray for a heart broken open, even though the breaking open always hurts? All the things I wrote for this sermon up to this point were finished before the mass murder at the mosques in New Zealand at the end of this week. And even now, I'm not sure I have words to begin to make sense or to put into perspective or to advise us about our reactions or our responses, but I do have this thought. Once again, we have reason to lament in a world where violence is glorified and racism and religious prejudice is so openly and violently expressed. We have reason to lament. And we have to lean in. We have to care more. What does that look like? I'm not exactly sure just now. But I know it involves a broken heart. And I know it involves some kind of willingness to stand with and to sacrifice. And I know it involves some willingness to claim or reclaim our connection to the whole human family. Amen. Thank you.
gracious leaders justify themselves, retelling history as a lie. Respectability as tight as clothing, drawn over poisoning inside. Oh,
Jerusalem. Michigan.